This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. How'd you sleep last night? Could you use some help getting better Z's? Is someone you know having trouble sleeping? Want some advice for them? How about the people driving next to you on the highway? Any reason for concern on how well rested they are? Maybe you've already guessed that sleep doctor Chris Winter is making a return visit to the Insight Studios today. If you've heard him here before, you know he can offer useful perspective from the personal to the societal on anything and everything to do with sleep. The fact that he's so much fun to hang out with is just an added bonus. So whatever questions, comments, theories, strategies, even success stories you'd like to offer about sleep, Dr. Winter will be ready to respond right after the news. Great to be with you. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. What would life be like if you started every day after getting deep, thoroughly refreshing night full of sleep? If you've got questions about how to accomplish that, please call us. If you've already discovered how to do that, please call us. Getting better sleep is our focus today, and our phone lines are open at 888-WMRA-TALK. It is a pleasure to welcome back to the Insight Studio neurologist, researcher, National Magazine columnist, and Charlottesville-based sleep treatment specialist, Dr. Chris Winter. Dr. Winter, thanks so much for making time for us again.
My pleasure. I can't believe it's my fourth time. I feel like Justin Timberlake on Saturday Night Live. You know, do I get a special jacket for the Four Timers Club? I mean,
we've gotten to the point where we figure we can't get past 7 or 8 months without you being back. Because there's always enough time for people to develop new sleep problems.
Absolutely. They're being created nightly as we speak.
Well, Chris, I think you first told us the story about a particular hair-raising or hair-lengthening experience more than 2 years ago. And we have to protect confidentiality here, of course. But I think you, the first time you told us the story of this trucker and why he grew his hair long on one side of his head, I think you called him Willie. And he had trouble getting enough sleep. So if you recall...
Willie.
Could you repeat that story for anybody who missed it the first time?
Absolutely. Willie was a truck driver who was seen at our sleep center because of excessive sleepiness. And Willie had a mullet, but it was not your ordinary mullet. So those of you who are familiar with the mullet, the short in the front, long in the back, Willie's mullet was really more of a 90-degree mullet. It was long on the side, short on the other side. So the eastern side of Willie's haircut was long and straight, and the western side was short and tight. And Willie's haircut was a very functional haircut. Willie's haircut was designed that way so it could be rolled up into his car or his truck window so that as Willie nodded off driving down the road, the pulling on his hair would wake him up. It's not unlike the one-legged stools they used to use when they were mixing dynamite for bombs, I think, back in the World War II days, where the individual could not fall asleep because they had to be awake to be balanced on the stool. Willie had figured out that if he rolled up his hair into the window, that was an effective way of keeping him awake as he drove down the road.
So let me make sure I get the visual here correct, Dr. Chris Winter. This patient that we're calling Willie worked driving big rigs all over the country. And when he got into his truck, particularly when he was driving at night, he would take the long part of his hair side of his head, put it out the window,
and then roll up the window.
And then start driving,
locked
knowing that he was going to be nodding off at times because he had so much trouble getting enough sleep. And so the hair being jerked would keep him hopefully from crashing because it would wake him back up.
That's right.
And when you originally told us that story, Chris, I think it was because you wanted people to kind of get a sense of how important sleep deprivation can be in our world.
Absolutely. And the lengths that people will go to deal with the problem outside of seeking medical care. I mean, the interesting thing about sleep problems are they creep up on you. I mean, it's not a heart attack. It's not a migraine that, you know, 1 minute you're fine, the next you've got a crushing pain in your chest like an elephant was standing on it. as you start to change and erode somebody's sleep over a long period of time, our bodies are pretty good at adjusting to it little by little. You find that, well, I used to be able to sit and read after lunch, and I can't really do that anymore without getting sleepy, so I'll walk around my office and read. Or you get to the point where you find that, you know, sitting in a car waiting for somebody, you get sleepy, so you get up and walk around. Well, I mean, eventually these things can get to the point where I've had patients, a patient who was a professor at UVA who said, I've taken the chairs out of my office because I cannot really sit in my office without falling asleep. So I just took the chairs out and I just walk around. If I read my papers, my students' work, I stand up and walk around. So we can make adjustments to a point, but at some point, like I always say, sleep always wins. So at some point, if Willie had not come to seek attention, the hair trick probably would not have worked and left him with a truck wrapped around a telephone pole.
And maybe wrapped around several fellow highway drivers' cars.
Absolutely.
Which
we're involved
in. Part of your point is that problems with sleep are not an individual problem, that whether somebody is driving big rig trucks or flying airplanes or operating heavy machinery or putting together drugs in a laboratory, being sleepy, being sleep deprived in our society can affect a lot more than the individual who's having the problem.
It's a tremendous liability, and it costs us a lot of money. Traffic accidents are often caused by sleepy drivers. I was involved in a court case where an individual fell asleep, hit a car, and it came out during the court proceedings that he had actually done it before. And these five individuals, four of which were killed instantly, and the fifth was very seriously injured, all because this guy was sleepy driving and thought he could stay up all night and help his friends move and do okay with that. It's a real problem. Patients who are nurses or are dealing with medications that if you pull up, you know, a certain amount of medication, you move that decimal place over one place and make that very simple mistake. And I've been in situations when I was in training as a doctor where sleepiness was profoundly affecting me. And it's really scary that the power you have. I mean, I remember one time very clearly when I was a resident, we had admitted a patient and I was entering in the information into our computer system that would sort of set the patient up with the diet he needed, the medications he needed, etc. And the phone rang beside me and I kind of came to. It's like that sense that you get when you think you might have been sleeping for a minute, but you're not sure. So I picked up the phone. I said, hello. And this woman said, who is this? I said, this is Dr. Winter. And she said, well, Dr. Winter, you're entering in your patient's medications in the cafeteria portal. So basically, all the medications I was entering in were not going into the pharmacy. They were going to the cafeteria. So somebody expecting, you know, diabetic diet, low salt, was actually getting the names and doses of medications on some printout on the other side of the hospital. So it's a funny mistake. It didn't cost anybody their lives, but these things happen a lot. And I remember thinking how unbelievably impaired I was at that time. Now, I will say this sort of predates the work hour week laws that have been enacted since I was a resident. And hopefully you're treating that, but they come with their own problems too.
Part of the problem perhaps is the terminology that we use. If somebody is sleep deprived, or is not getting enough sleep, or is having trouble sleeping, we call them being sleepy. And that just kind of sounds silly. I mean, it sounds like a 4 or 5 year old little kid in his PJs with the footsies on the PJs, you know, rubbing his knuckles against his eyes. But I've heard you say before, Chris, that as a medical issue, we just don't take it seriously. That if somebody has a what did you tell me once? If somebody has a seizure at work,
absolutely,
you call the ambulance. If somebody's nodding off at their desk, you call them lazy.
That's right. You're calling HR to get somebody to replace them because they just don't care about their job or they're lazy. I mean, sleepiness, it does. I mean, it's the name of a dwarf, for God's sakes. I mean, sleepy. I mean, it is kind of a silly term, but it's a very powerful term. And it's very defined in terms of when we think about somebody being sleepy, it's how likely are you to fall asleep as you're listening to this radio interview? How likely are you to fall asleep during a baseball game your kids might be playing at? How likely are you to fall asleep during a church sermon? If your answers to those questions are very likely, then you are sleepy, and that's very powerful, and it's very different from somebody who might be fatigued or have low energy. That's an important consideration, an important symptom in and of itself, but it doesn't mean sleepy. What sleepy is the drive, this force that's making you become unconscious, maybe against your own will. And there's not that many things that can cause somebody to be sleepy. So when somebody is sleepy, when grandpa is falling asleep during his grandson's birthday party, right there in the middle of all the hubbub of all these 8-year-old kids running and screaming around, that means something. There's something going on with grandpa that shouldn't be going on. And so, yes, I think that as a society, we have to treat sleepiness with the same concern that we do somebody who has a seizure or a heart attack or a stroke. These are all serious problems and all very much intermingled.
So to you on the other side of your radio, do you have trouble falling asleep? Do you have trouble staying asleep? Once you get out of bed, do you have trouble staying awake? We're taking any and all questions related to the topic of sleep. 888-WMRA-TALK is how to reach us by phone. In all numbers, that's 888-967-2825. Or if you prefer to type instead of talk, you can reach us on our Facebook page. We're listed on Facebook as WMRA's Virginia Insight. And we have this on the Facebook page, Dr. Chris Winter, from Heidi, who says, is there a particularly ideal set of hours for one to sleep? For example, might midnight to 8 a.m. be better or worse than 10 p.m. to 6 a.m.? Is there some method to try to discern the best sleep hours for yourself? Should you try a slightly different schedule each week until you find one that leaves you feeling most well rested?
I think that's a great question, Heidi. I think there's several answers to that. I think that the precise answer would be yes, there probably is an ideal schedule for Heidi. The question being, how do you figure that out? And a lot of that has to do with several issues. The biggest being light. Light is sort of is a big determiner of when we tend to do our best, when we tend to be the most awake, and when we tend to sleep the best. So for most individuals, because of our brains and the way our eyes work in conjunction with our brains, we tend to sleep better when it's dark and we're awake more when it's light. So for Heidi, the question really concerns what is her chronotype, which means chronotype, C-H-R-O-N-O-T-Y-P-E. It's basically, are you a night owl or are you a morning lark? And so for those individuals, the scale or the spectrum of when you're going to sleep best tends to depend upon those types of tendencies. So one thing that Heidi could do is she could certainly experiment. And when you experiment, what you really want to do is you want to set up a very strict schedule for a certain period of time. You're not going to be able to determine what schedule works best for you, in a two-night period. But what you might want to say is, during the month of September, I'm going to try the 10 to 6 and see what happens. And then during the month of October, I might try the 12 to 8. So number one, that all hinges on, can Heidi actually get up at 6 or 8? Does she have that kind of flexibility in her schedule? A lot of people don't. If she does, that's great. She might be able to experiment and kind of figure that out. But the chronotype, the idea of a morning type or evening type, can be very useful. There are actually surveys that you can use. I'm sure if you could Google Horn Ostberg or a morningness, eveningness questionnaire, you can take the little questionnaire. It looks like something you might take in the back of a 17 magazine, like, are you compatible with your mate? Answer these questions and it'll rate you on a scale of, should be married immediately versus you should run screaming the opposite direction. So she can figure out by taking this survey, is she more of a night person? Is she more of a morning person? And that might help her tailor her schedule a little bit more shaded towards late, which is sort of the way I feel, or a little bit more shaded toward the morning, which is how my wife would sort of approach her sleep. And there's no right or wrong answer. So ultimately, it does come down to, do you feel good or do you not? There's no right or wrong answer to that.
Great question, Heidi. Thanks so much for that. We've got some calls coming in, but we still have one line open. If you've got a question, thought, idea, suggestion, anything to do with sleep, you can reach us at 888-WMRA-TALK. Our conversation with neurologist and sleep medicine specialist Chris Winter is going to continue in just a bit more than 1 minute. And out there in Elkton, Melissa, I think you're going to be the first call up when we get back. Dr. Christopher Winter, longtime researcher into sleep disorders, is our guest. He is a neurologist who leads two different sleep treatment centers in Charlottesville, writes sleep advice columns for a number of national publications, Men's Health and the Huffington Post among them, and travels the globe consulting with a variety of professional sports teams on sleep-related issues. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Melissa in Elkton has called us. Melissa, thanks for doing that. Your question or comment for Dr. Winter, please.
I actually have a comment about sleeping. From the time I was, I'm 24 now, just turned 24. From the time I was about 12 to about 20, I was tired all the time. I mean, every day was just a struggle to stay awake in class. They had me on, even on Adderall, I was just struggling. And my mom feels so bad now. She used to yell at me at the time, you know, why are you so tired? You're just lazy. Well, we went over to UNC, and I actually had a sleep study. You know, I got CAT scans, everything, and they found out that I had a low serotonin in my brain, which was making me kick in my sleep. Like, normal people kick 20 or 30 times at night, and I was kicking in the 200s. And so they got me on Neurontin and got me on a regular sleep schedule and took my phone away at night so I didn't have that bright light right before I went to bed. And now I feel rested, and it's just completely different. It's just amazing what good sleep patterns can do for you.
That's great, Melissa. Actually, I did my sleep fellowship with Brad Vaughn down at UNC, so I'm very partial to the wonderful and really cutting-edge sleep program that he has down there. You know, Melissa's describing a condition that's commonly referred to as periodic limb movement disorder, and it's a very interesting condition that in it, individuals will have little leg movements during the night, and they can really easily get up into the hundreds, and they're not particularly dramatic. I mean, these individuals typically have pretty restless sleep. They can really tear a bed up if you let them. And unless they have a bed partner, which she's not going to have given the age she was when she started this out, you know, most people don't really notice that. And it can have a devastating effect on people's sleep. Every time that leg moves, your brain wakes up to make it happen. So the title is somewhat of a misnomer. The restless leg syndrome, the legs are fine. It's the brain that's got a problem. And Melissa mentioned her serotonin levels being low. Typically, it's dopamine, which is the catecholamine that's deficient in this condition. Dopamine's a remarkable chemical in our brain. It does so many things. It's the chemical of pleasure. It's the chemical that keeps us sort of sitting quietly. When you look at an individual like Michael J. Fox, who's got Parkinson's disease, his dopamine is incredibly dysregulated. You can see what it does to all aspects of his body. Now, Parkinson's disease and restless leg syndrome are not the same thing. If you have restless leg syndrome, you're not going to develop Parkinson's disease. But it is a condition that features a dopamine dysregulation. And so when that dopamine level gets low in the brain, which it typically does at night when the person sleeps, their body's all over the place. And so they wake up, they feel very poorly. They're tired the next day, and it's a condition you're not going to pick up on very easily. So unfortunately, just as Melissa said, the mother felt bad because she was telling Melissa she wasn't lazy and wasn't doing her best in school, and she's falling asleep in class. So you can imagine the difficulties that go along with conditions like this. Narcolepsy is another one that affects young people that are very sleepy. And I think that if anybody's listening to Melissa's story, the theme is this: if you are excessively sleepy and it's affecting your life or the lives of others, do something about it. There's people out there that can help. So if your PCP, your primary care doctor, is not giving you the satisfaction you need, call a sleep center. There's people there that can get you feeling right.
Melissa, thank you so very much for taking the time to share your story with us. One, because we all learn something from hearing it, and two, because sounds like you're better now, so people who are having problems like this, there's hope.
Oh, absolutely. It took eight years of my mom, you know, just, you know, why aren't you awake? You know, why are you so tired? And it just, it really, you have to take that step to progressively get yourself better.
I'm sorry it took,
just help.
Sorry to hear it took so long, but I'm so glad to hear that things are going well for you now.
Oh, yeah, it's going great now. My sleep patterns are wonderful. I get up rested every morning.
Thanks again. Phone number here on Virginia Insight, 888-WMRA-TALK. All our lines busy at the moment, but we're going to have one line open here in a few moments if you want to talk with sleep specialist Dr. Chris Winter. We're going next to Winchester. Krista, thanks for calling in. Your question or comment, please.
Well, my question is fueled in part but from being an anthropologist by training and from having managed a staff at a fitness facility for some time. during my time managing the staff at the fitness facility, one of the criticisms that I heard from, you know, a couple employees lodged at other employees was that they were weak because they didn't want to work early morning. You know, they were sleepy in the early mornings. And my mantra was always to remind them that sleeping, napping, et cetera, is not a weakness. And I'm wondering, as an anthropologist, is this perception that sleeping is a sign of weakness, is this attitude endemic only in the United States, or is it something that is cross-cultural? Have you done any research into that? And I'm just sort of curious what perceptions of sleep, sleepiness, napping, and so forth are in other cultures. We know that in Latin America, for example, it's perfectly acceptable to lay down in the middle of the day. How does this translate across borders and so forth? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks, Krista.
Krista, I'd like to take you with me when I go to work with professional sports teams, because the idea that sleep is a sign of weakness is rampant in professional sports. I mean, if you're a professional football coach, you have to have a cot in your office, and you have to be the last person who leaves the facility. You've got to be the first one there. I mean, we hear that all the time. You know, he's the last to leave the locker room. I mean, that's the sign of strength, and you see this in professional in businesses and anybody who sort of looks to take a nap is weak. And I think that to answer your question, first of all, I've never done any research on this, but I certainly have a lot of firsthand experience, as would anybody who deals with sleep for a living. I think that it is more acceptable in other cultures, the idea that you can take a nap and not be viewed as weak. The idea that in other cultures, it is part of the culture that around midday, things shut down, there is some sort of sleeping period, and things sort of reopen after that nap time and maybe stay open a little bit late. I mean, a lot of individuals now are kind of looking at sort of the nap as a way to extend or increase productivity and not simply a sign of weakness. I think the thing you have to be careful about with napping is it a sign of dysfunction, or are you using it as an enhancement? So if you look at, you know, Google and some of these sort of more forward-thinking companies, they are actually creating napping situations and napping areas for their employees. There's a great scene in the movie The Internship, which is a fictitious, you know, internship with Vince Vaughn and Owen Wilson, who are trying to get interns. And there's a great scene when they're in these napping pods, you know, so they're kind of making a joke about it. But I think that perception is changing slowly. I mean, even one of the teams that I work with, a Major League Baseball team, we're actually creating what is called a regeneration room within their facility, which is basically a fancy word for a place where you can go and get an incredibly good nap in an incredibly, you know, peaceful environment, and some technology in there that's kind of fun to look at. So I
know one of the teams you work with is the Pittsburgh Pirates. Are you allowed to tell us whether it's that team, or do we have to keep that confidential?
I don't know. That is one team that I work with. I don't think that this team would really care if other people knew, but I like
that. But it is sort of exciting that a Major League Baseball team is doing this kind of
thing. It is. And you know, we've talked about it with other organizations. And the fun thing about it is that, generally speaking, the area within their stadium that we're building this place is usually sort of subprime real estate. I want the place that's away from everything else. I want the place that's all cinder block with no windows. I mean, so they were perfectly happy to create this, and the players have really responded to it. And obviously, since the players are the Pittsburgh Pirates are getting ready to potentially go to the playoffs and have their first winning season in 20 years, we must be doing something right. Not to say that we're building the nap center in Pittsburgh.
Neurologist and sleep medicine specialist Chris Winter, our guest. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Going next to Charlottesville. Brian, thanks for calling in. Your question or comment for Dr. Winter, please.
Hi, can you hear me all right?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Well, as I'm sitting here listening to this, it's fascinating. Lots of questions are coming to mind. But the reason I called, and I guess having listened to the first caller, my question boils down to what is excessive sleepiness. I mean, I as long as I can remember, I've had difficulty reading. With one exception. I mean, if I try to read, I fall asleep. in fact, you know, my adult life has pretty much been if I stop and sit still, I'm liable to fall asleep. With the exception being early in the morning, I could read for an extended period. And that's been sort of a handicap because I like to read and I have lots of reasons to read. But so I guess, you know, my interest would be in how do you determine what is excessive sleepiness? I have no idea whether what I'm experiencing is typical of a lot of people or not.
Brian, I'm so happy you called. What Brian is describing is very common, particularly for individuals who have disorders of sleep that have been there for a long time. You lose what is normal. I have one of my favorite stories was a patient of mine who was actually diagnosed with narcolepsy. And so narcolepsy is a condition that features excessive sleepiness from a really early part, early time in your life. So these individuals don't really know what it's like not to be tremendously sleepy. And, thinking about Melissa, who took her 8 years to figure out her problem, the average person with narcolepsy, 10 to 15 years between the time they start exhibiting symptoms and the time somebody actually figures out what in the world's going on with them. So this guy was diagnosed with narcolepsy, but before he was diagnosed, we were talking about sleepiness, just like Brian and I are talking. And he said at one point, he was talking about when he was growing up, and he said, Dr. Winter, it's kind of like when you used to go to the hardware store with your father and he would be sitting there picking out paint, and all you wanted to do was to clear a shelf off of all the tools and empty the shelf and climb up there and fall asleep. And he looked at me and I looked at him and I said, I don't know what you're talking about. But he said it almost like it was a shared experience, like, how it's when you're growing up and boys start to like girls. It was like he viewed that experience of wanting to take items off a shelf in a department store, climb up on the shelf and go to sleep as, doesn't everybody feel this kind of sleepiness? So it's simple and easy, but also very difficult to answer your question, Brian. I would say that you're excessively sleepy. I would say that anybody who wants to read something, wants to watch a movie, wants to participate in an activity and can't because they're too sleepy is excessively sleepy. In fact, a lot of people, the battle cry for the excessively sleepy is, I'm fine as long as I'm active and doing something. And life should not have to be led that way. You shouldn't have to be moving around or doing something active to stay awake. In fact, one of my first patients when I moved back to Charlottesville was a guy who was incredibly sleepy, just like Brian. And we figured out what was going on with him. He came back to my office and he looked like hell. I thought he looked worse than when we fixed him. And I said, look, I hope you don't take this the wrong way, but you don't look nearly as good now as I thought you would. In fact, I think you look worse than when I found you. What is going on? He said, Dr. Winter, it's the best thing. Now that you fixed my sleepiness, I'm actually staying up late reading books, all the books that I wanted to read before you fixed me. So now we've switched one sleep problem for another. And so we eventually moderated that. But it was this guy, like Brian, he wants to read. How sad that this guy wants to read books, but doesn't feel like he can because he can't stay awake to make them happen. So, Brian, I think you're excessively sleepy. I think one thing you might want to do is look up the Epworth Sleepiness Scale on your computer. It's a very simple little questionnaire.
EPWORTH,
Epworth Sleepiness Scale. It's 8 situations. We can go through them really quickly. How likely are you to fall asleep, Brian, sitting and reading a book, watching television, being the passenger in a car for an hour without a break? So as you go through these scenarios, you say to yourself, there's no chance I would fall asleep. That would be scored a 0. Slight chance you might fall asleep, you give that a 1. 50-50 that you would fall asleep, that would be a 2. Or definite, Dr. Winter, I cannot sit down and watch TV without falling asleep. That gets scored a 3. So 8 times 3, 24, that's the highest you can score. 0 would be the lowest you could score. That's saying that you would never fall asleep in any of those 8 situations. If you're scoring 9 or above, you are by definition on that scale excessively sleepy. So that's a great place for you to start, Brian. And let me know if we can help you, because I think that your sleepiness is not only excessive, but I would say it's sort of very excessive.
Brian, thanks so much for sharing your experience with us.
And it is a handicap. He used that word, and I think it's important. Like we were talking about earlier, this is a handicap. No different than if Brian's saying, every time I sit down to read a book, I have a seizure. I mean, it's It's that kind of problem.
Neurologist and sleep medicine specialist Dr. Chris Winter, our guests. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. 888-WMRA Talk, how to reach us by phone. Next to Harrisonburg, Claire, thanks for calling in. Your question or comment, please.
Hi. I work at a job that requires several different shifts. So sometimes I'll come home and go to bed at 1 and have to wake up at 8 in the morning. Other times I don't have to work that day, and sometimes I can sleep in till noon, and I get off work closer to 8 or 9, so I'll get plenty of sleep. But I'm finding that this non-consistent sleep pattern is just making me sleepy all day, and I end up taking naps in the morning. I'll take naps in the afternoon, and I don't know if that is making me more and more sleepy because I'm sleeping more. So what advice do you have to regulate a sleep schedule that can't be self-regulated? How do I get enough sleep, and how do I not stay sleepy throughout the day?
It's a great question, Claire, and this is very much a question for a very current current topic. We call what Claire is describing, and she described it perfectly, shift work disorder. And so this is a very hotly debated topic within sleep. Is it really a disorder? Is it not? I would argue that it is, even though it's man-made. So I can say to Claire, Claire, the simple solution for your job or for your problem is to get a job that you go to work at 8 o'clock in the morning and you get off at 4. And Claire's going to say to me, I'd love that, but I can't find that job, or this job pays so well that I've got to make my mortgage payment, so I can't get off this job. There's a variety of reasons why Claire may say, well, that's a very simple solution, but it's not a practical one for my life. So now Claire and I are in the office. Claire is excessively sleepy. She's not feeling 100%. I'm concerned about her ability to drive after certain shifts when she feels sleepy. What do we do? So there's a variety of things that you can do, Claire. And to answer your, just take a step back, and Claire is saying, why do I feel sleepy with this? I tell my patients a lot, our bodies, and specifically our brains, like to be able to anticipate what's happening rather than react to what's happening. And forgive me if I've said this story before, but it's no different than eating. An individual who likes, I love crab cakes. You bring me a crab cake right now and I'll eat it with pleasure. I'm really hungry because I haven't had lunch today. So I'll be raiding the radio station for something here in about 20 minutes. But so the individual likes to eat. I like to eat that crab cake at lunchtime. It would taste great. Now, if you sneak into my house at 3 o'clock in the morning, figure out where I live, buy me a crab cake and surprise me, wake me up and say, ah, Dr. Winter, I've come to your house at 3 o'clock in the morning. Here's a crab cake. Why don't you eat it? I will probably eat it out of politeness because you went to all the trouble of finding me a crab cake and bring it to my house at 3 o'clock in the morning, but it's not going to sit in my belly. My brain's not going to respond to it that well at 3 o'clock in the morning because it's simply not anticipating a crab cake at that time of night. So Claire's brain is undergoing a problem right here. The problem is Claire's brain cannot really adequately predict when Claire's going to be awake and doing her job and when she's going to be asleep, or when she's going to be somewhere in between resting or watching TV. So her brain has basically given up and said, you know what? Your schedule is such a mess. We're going to be sleepy sometimes, wake sometimes, but for the most part, we're just going to be kind of gray in the middle. So this is classic shift work disorder. It's what people in Seattle are dealing with when they never see the sun. And we can talk about after the break some ways that Claire can get her schedule back on track.
And keep her job.
And keep her job. Maybe even get promoted so she's working 8 to 5 more consistently because she's climbed up the ladder.
So, Claire, we're going to finish up with Dr. Winter's answer on that when we get back from the break. And then, Douglas, you're going to be our next call when we return here on Virginia Insight in a bit more than 1 minute. William Christopher Winter is a medical doctor, a neurologist who both studies and treats sleep disorders. He's the founder of the Charlottesville Neurology and Sleep Medicine Clinic. He also serves as director of the Sleep Medicine Center at Martha Jefferson Hospital in Virginia. My name, by the way, is Tom Graham. This is Virginia Insight. Before we get to Douglas, you are going to finish up with hope for Claire and all other shift workers.
That's right, Claire. So here's what I would say to Claire, and the answer has several levels. The first is there may be intrinsic things with your schedule that are not good. A lot of times if Claire goes to her employer and says, look, I understand you've got to cover certain shifts, but maybe the way you design those shifts and have them rotate could make a huge difference in terms of the way Claire and her other working counterparts feel. And a lot of times, bosses or supervisors are open to the idea. Like, look, cover the shifts however you want. As long as they're covered, I don't care how things rotate. So there can be changes in the way she goes from one shift to the next that can be incredibly beneficial to Claire and much easier.
Such as?
Such as, you know, it's a lot easier for our bodies to stay up a little bit later progressively than it is for us to go to bed a little bit earlier progressively. It's the reason why it's easy to fly out to Vegas and feel good when you get there, because you're just staying up a little bit later than you normally do. When you fly back home to Charlottesville, it's 11 o'clock, it's time to go to bed, but your body's telling you in no uncertain terms it's 9 o'clock and you should still be gambling somewhere. So it's hard to make those adjustments. And that's one of the things we deal with our players a lot, is helping them adjust in terms of shift work back and forth across the country. So
if I have a shift that's from noon to 8, it's better for when it changes, for it to change to be from 4 p.m. to midnight.
Absolutely.
Instead of it being
that's
the
right.
other way, 8
exactly.
a.m. to...
The forward shifting shift. And then when you get to that late shift, there's the day off, and then you start all over again. Going backwards is an absolute killer. The other thing with Claire is, you know, these things tend to go along with age. As people get older, they don't tend to do as well with shift work. So there's some, you know, intrinsic things about the worker that can be problematic too. Light. What kind of light is Claire exposed to when she works? And is it possible for her to buy a little cheap light box and use that to help with her awakenings and sleepings at night? There are clearly, I'm not a medication person, I'm not a big drug doctor, but there are wonderful medications specifically for shift workers that can both allow them to get to sleep easier. So as Claire comes into a situation where she's got to go to bed and get her 6-7 hours before she goes to her shift work that night, these medications can help her get to sleep instead of suffering and trying to force herself to sleep, which is often anxiety promoting. And there's also medications that can help Claire stay awake during the shift that are actually FDA approved for shift work. So there are a lot of options for Claire. She just has to figure out which ones are going to work best for her. And we're always there to help with whatever. I mean, I've actually gone, when my patient said, look, if my boss would have you out at our company, could you tour the facility and talk to him about shifts that work better? And we did. And it was a very beneficial to both the patient and to the business, because he said everybody was much more happy with the schedule. And, you know, I think when you're happy and better rested, you're more likely to be productive. You're less likely to have accidents. You're less likely to be sick. So the workforce is not suffering because people are having, you know, difficulties with their health, which come along with shift work. So there's all kinds of benefits there. So, you know, however we can help as a community of sleep doctors, we want to help.
Douglas, I understand you're driving or have been driving somewhere along the roadways in Virginia. Your question or comment for neurologist and sleep medicine specialist Chris Winter, please.
Yes, hello, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my phone call. With the new energy drink fad that's getting more and more popular every day, and, you know, easier, smaller bottles, more caffeine, I was wondering if you can give insight as your opinion on how that's affecting people's sleep cycles. Really, I mean, it seems like an endless circle. You don't get adequate enough sleep the night before, so to aid yourself throughout the day, you fill up on energy drinks and stay alert, and by the time you're ready to go to sleep at night, your body is doped up off of caffeine, not ready to fall asleep, and then it just starts over the next day. I was wondering if you could just give your opinion on that.
Yeah, Douglas, great comment. I think that your perception of what's going on is right on the money. My opinion is they're vastly overused, and that the dangers of these high caffeinated beverage drinks are underreported. I've actually personally seen young people have stroke-like symptoms and stroke-like findings on their MRIs because of massive amounts of caffeine. So they're not without risk. Now, do I think that a well-placed caffeinated beverage before a long-distance drive or before a shift every now and then is a bad thing? No, I don't think it's a bad thing at all. It's just that when I see people like at a baseball game sitting out enjoying, they're drinking one Red Bull after another, I don't know that that's necessarily a drink that we should be consuming a lot of. I mean, caffeine's a diuretic. Again, they're not terribly safe when consumed in high amounts. And a lot of times it's a weak and shoddy bandage for an underlying sleep problem that we've talked a lot about today. I mean, Melissa is having difficulty. Her mother's yelling at her because she's not getting up in the morning. Very easy for a young person to turn to that caffeine and the calories and the sugar and all the things that go along with it. You know, Brian, who's excessively sleepy, I'd be shocked if he weren't using these things to crutch himself up during the day and make it through the day. So, and these things, they work. I mean, there's no question about it. When we were on vacation, I found some energy drinks and I found some drinks that were sedating, and my kids are a little bit older, and we did an experiment because we were having the same conversation. They were like, well, do they really work? Well, I said, well, let's figure it out. And so we read them and I gave them small amounts of one, the upper or the downer, and I didn't tell them what I was giving them, and we kind of watched how they proceeded the rest of the day, and they clearly work. I mean, our kids were, you know, the ones who were given the ones that were supposed to wake them up, woke up, and the ones that were given the downers were down. And so, you know, in terms of the efficacy, I mean, clearly these things have, potency, but I think that we're just using them improperly. And certainly a father giving his kids energy drinks could be viewed as improper, but they were fully informed of the risks and benefits of the trial and voluntarily.
And they had a doctor with them.
They had a doctor in case anything went horribly wrong with their little juice cup full of, you know, tiny amount of one or the other.
Somewhere in our audience is someone who used to have loads of trouble getting enough sleep, but found a solution to their insomnia that has worked especially well for them. If you are that person and you'd be willing to share your story, we've got a phone line open for you at 888-WMRA-TALK. Anything and everything about sleep open for discussion. You can also post to us on Facebook, where we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. And we have this from Lauren on that Facebook page. She says, a friend has a lot of trouble with grinding her teeth and clenching her jaw while she sleeps, but does not feel she can afford the $600+ her dentist said it would cost to make a night guard for her. Is there anything else she can do, or is this really a dental problem, not a sleep problem?
I think it's both. Most people, when they, bruxism is our term for the day, that means grinding your teeth. Most people who brux or clench do it during periods of stress. I used to remember when I was taking exams in college, I'd wake up and I felt like my jaw was about to fall off my face because clearly I was clenching in the night. So usually stress sort of exacerbates it. And we tend to not brux when we're actually asleep. So usually something will awaken us. We brux or grind our teeth
a
little bit.
Spell that?
Sure, it's bruxism. So bruxism is the term, and so individuals do it generally when they're awakened from sleep. So if somebody's bruxing, they're generally not asleep when it's occurring. So one potential treatment would be, what is it that's waking you up and making you brux? So for instance, people have sleep apnea, often brux. When you treat their sleep apnea, the bruxism goes away. Now, there are other devices that are less expensive that you can find, you know, shopping around the internet, that can keep you from grinding your teeth. I had a patient who actually got a football mouthpiece that his son would, you know, the kind that your kid would use if they were playing football or some sport that involved things that could knock your teeth out. And he just bought that and wore it at night. I mean, I think that anytime you're doing anything that involves your teeth, you need to have a conversation with your dentist about it. But this guy basically said, look, I just need to put something soft between my teeth to keep me from doing this. And he felt like it worked quite well. So I think that it's one of those problems that crosses the line between sleep and dental. There are dental appliances that can help you with sleep apnea. So there's a fair amount of sharing of patients between these two fields. So I think a conversation with your dentist saying, look, I can't afford the $600 mouthpiece, but what would be the risks and benefits of using something else? Be just to, you know, to keep me from doing this at night. And there are medications that can be used. However, usually the side effects are such a turnoff for patients that they're not commonly used, but certainly can be.
Next call coming in is from Kathy. Kathy, where are you calling us from?
From Charlottesville.
Thank you for doing that. Your question or comment for Dr. Chris Winter, please.
For taking my call. My call is almost the opposite. My 10-year-old grandson, you cannot wake him up. There's no alarm loud enough to wake him up. You can shake him, and finally you may rouse him. Unfortunately, at the age of 10, he's still wetting the bed. He's been through to a pediatric nephrologist. There's absolutely nothing wrong with him physically. It's been suggested that he is in stage four sleep, and that's why he can't wake up. Is there such a thing as stage four sleep? And if there is there a treatment for it?
That's a great call. What this boy is suffering from is a condition called enuresis, which is basically bedwetting, all kinds of great terms. I'll go ahead and spell it before you ask. E-N-U-R-E-S-I-S. Enuresis is bedwetting is a common problem in individuals, and as you get older, you tend to grow out of it. So it's also a red flag in the sleep world for kids, because a lot of times sleeping disturbances can create a perfect situation for enuresis to occur. So I would wonder if instead of the nephrologist, you know, a neurologist or a sleep specialist might be the next step for your grandson. Stage four sleep does exist, and it's perfectly normal. It's a natural stage of sleep. We used to call it stage four. It's now called stage N3. So we combined. So basically, here's your sleep primer for the day. the stages of sleep: REM sleep, which is dream sleep, or what we commonly refer to as dream sleep, REM, rapid eye movement sleep. There's light sleep, which is considered to be stage N1. And there's N2 is a deeper form of light sleep, and now N3, which is deep sleep. N3 used to be called stages 3 or 4. We don't divide them up anyway. So there is stage 4. We just don't call it that anymore. So stage 4, deep sleep, N3, all the same thing, slow wave sleep, delta sleep. This is a sleep that typically occurs early in the night. It's the sleep that's where, you know, restfulness comes. It's the sleep where individuals secrete growth hormone. So a lot of times you see this clinical picture of a kid who doesn't sleep well. There's bedwetting, hard to wake up, and you know, not quite as tall as what we think he should be based upon the kids in his class. So any individual who's that driven to sleep, you know, the questions arise: is he getting adequate sleep? You know, is he a split family, and when he's staying with dad lets him stay up all night and watch movies and sports, and that's what's really making him feel sleepy. If the answer is no, he's getting plenty of sleep, adequate amount of sleep. In fact, he wants to sleep all the time. We're back to where we were with Brian, which is your grandson is excessively sleepy. And if it's not a quantity issue, it is most certainly a quality issue. So I think that your grandson really needs to see a sleep specialist and probably deserves a sleep study. Other questions to answer: is he doing well in school? Is he having difficulty in terms of concentration and focus? All of those things can go along with sleep disturbances as well, too. So it's great that urologically, and that's with a U, not an N, he's all checked out well. There's nothing structural going on making him wet the bed. Now the question is, you know, what's causing it? And, you know, pediatricians will tell you that enuresis, he's going to grow out of it, and chances are he will. But enuresis is a pretty easy thing to treat once you get past sort of the structural types of problems that are there that need to be addressed. So I think that I would be calling your grandson's pediatrician and saying, look, I think it's time we investigate his sleep and a potential link between this incredible sleepiness during the morning and maybe why he's wetting the bed. Great call.
Kathy, thank you so much for your call. We're almost out of time, but we've got, time, Roman in Charlottesville, to squeeze in a quick comment from you. Roman, do you have your radio turned on? Okay, so we've lost Roman's call. We have time for you to conclude on whatever point you want to.
Oh, I'd love to, because somebody was mentioning earlier, maybe it was you, about tricks to fall asleep at night. And I think any time you are trying to fall asleep, you're setting yourself up for failure. Sleep should be something that just sort of naturally happens. And the more you try, the more importance you put on it and angst you have if you don't sleep well at night, the harder it can be for some people, which is why they'll always fall asleep watching television. When they get into bed, they can't do it. I had a patient recently who had this wonderful trick. He said, oh, I want you to share it with the world because I think it works so well. And what he does is when he gets in bed at night, he plays golf. And so he goes to his favorite golf course in his mind, and he brings his equipment, and he walks over to the tee, he looks at it, he pulls the club out that he wants, and he literally starts to play golf. And every time he hits it, he imagines the perfect shot. And he says, I've never made it past the second hole when I play, which is great. So he was so excited about this that he shared it with his wife, who doesn't play golf and knows nothing about the sport. And so what she does now is she bakes banana bread. So she gets all of the ingredients out, pulls the bananas she's been keeping out of the freezer, starts to mix the flour, the butter, and she says, I've never even gotten the loaf in the oven. So I think anything that you can do to kind of distract yourself, if you're somebody who's having difficulty falling asleep, is important. But just keep in mind that our bodies do a wonderful job of getting sleep, even if you don't think you're getting it. So the idea that you're not sleeping or that you can't sleep is not true. It's just about getting the sleep to the satisfaction level you want it to be. So don't panic. Our bodies are not going to let you not sleep. Your bosses may not let you sleep, but your bodies aren't going to let you not sleep.
Our guest has been the founder of the Charlottesville Neurology and Sleep Medicine Clinic, as well as director of the Sleep Medicine Center at Martha Jefferson Hospital in Charlottesville, Dr. Chris Winter. Chris, thanks so very much for your time.
You're welcome. Do I get to come back for one for the thumb, the fifth visit?
I would think so, at least. And we might start working on the other finger, too.
Awesome. That's been a pleasure. This is a great show.
You can find audio postings of Virginia Insight by going online to WMRA.org, then clicking on programs, and then clicking on Virginia Insight. And when you get to that page, you will find more information about the work that Dr. Winter is doing. There were a couple of Facebook questions that came in that we did not have time to answer on the air, but we're going to ask Dr. Winter to stay for a few minutes and see if he can address those in writing on our Facebook page. Now, I also ought to mention that Virginia Insight's executive producers, Matt Binge, our associate producers, Terry Ward and Bob Levicky. Some of our break music supplied by Robert Jaspe and Inner Rhythm. Thanks so much for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more insight after you're well rested.